Welcome back to The Rock Pod. I am John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I am Lisa Bibby, your local neighborhood realtor with Keller Williams Advantage.
I'm Trish Carruth, third generation jeweler and owner of Your Personal Jeweler.
I'm Andrea Arndt, an attorney at Dickinson Wright.
Our guest today is Michelle O'Connor Tuklinski of the Judson Center. Michelle, great to have you here. We'd love to know a little bit about you and your background before we get into everything about Judson Center.
Sure, thanks. I'm glad to be here. I have been working in the field of developmental disabilities pretty much my entire career, so good 25 plus years. I am a clinical social worker by training who has moved up the ranks into leadership and now hold a leadership role for Judson Center, but my heart and passion has always been in the field of developmental disabilities, including autism.
So, Michelle, you are new to the Judson Center. What drew you to the organization to serve as the director of its autism and development disabilities programs?
So I was working at a nonprofit organization in Grand Rapids for the past 2 years, and my family was still in Farmington Hills. I took the job in Grand Rapids, working for this organization, doing the same thing I'm doing for Judson Center, opening centers and leading their autism services. And then once COVID hit, because my family was in Detroit, which was one of the epicenters of Michigan's outbreak, we made the decision that I would stay in Grand Rapids in shelter, they would stay in Detroit in shelter. And after about 9 months of that, I decided it was too challenging and did not like being away from my family. So at that point, I decided that I wanted to transition back to the East Side. And at the same time, I was moving, sold my condo, saw the opportunity for Judson Center, and it actually fit my two passions, program development and inclusive job opportunities for people with special needs. And so when I was given the opportunity, I was actually excited that this worked out to be able to be back on the East Side with my family, where I have lived my entire life, and then have an opportunity to continue the two things I'm very passionate about.
So I have two little kids, and I know that when I take them to the doctor, I have to fill out questionnaires, and I think the doctor does kind of like a screening to some extent for autism. But when should a child be screened for autism?
Great question. So the CDC, which is the Centers for Disease Control, and the American Academy of Pediatrics recently changed their guidelines and are now requesting that primary care practitioners actually evaluate kids at 9 months, 18 months, 24 months, and/or 30 months. And that equates with well child checks, which is your experience with your own practitioner. And the reason that we're now adding that and looking at kids at that age is because currently, the average age that kids are being diagnosed with autism is still over the age of 4. And with autism diagnostics, it's very important that we get a diagnosis and we start early intervention because that's when we see the greatest outcome and the most healthy developmental milestones. We're able to work on reversing some of those things. So that is the current practice. Not to say that there are not kids over those ages who still have some of those symptoms. You know, we have parents who say, well, you know, my husband's speech was delayed. He's just a quirky kid. You know, we really need to have parents be empowered to have those candid conversations with their practitioners to raise those concerns, to see if there is the potential that their child might have autism, and then look at getting that diagnosis and get into services.
Can you explain the autism diagnostic process?
Sure. The first place parents should start for a diagnostic evaluation would be with the primary care doctor. So your primary care doctor has been monitoring your child's development from the time that you started seeing them. I would have an appointment with them, raise your concerns. If you have concerns about their development, whether it's delayed, if there are communication issues or concerns, if you're seeing strange behaviors or odd behaviors that just don't make sense, that would fall in the realm of atypical. Those would be the things I would start with my physician. So then they could use some of the screening tools that they have access to start looking at, do we have some concerns here? And from there, you really have two different avenues for diagnoses. One, I would say, we'll call it a clinical autism diagnosis, and the other one would be an educational diagnosis. So in order for a clinical diagnosis, you would be referred to either a private diagnostic clinic that you would be referred to from your insurance carrier. So if you look on the back of your commercial insurance carrier, there is a number. And if you call that number, they would tell you who is contracted with the insurance company to do diagnostic assessments. The other option is there are community mental health networks and or Medicaid services, and they have their own set of diagnosticians or contracted providers. So you would contact your local community health network, you would call, do an intake, they would then get you set up with an autism diagnostic clinic that they're contracted through specifically. And then the other option would be for people who have Blue Cross Blue Shield or Blue Care Network, they have their own diagnostic process, and that is called an approved autism evaluation clinic. There are currently 17 approved clinics in the state of Michigan. And when you are seen through those clinics, you actually see a physician, a speech and language pathologist, and a neuropsychologist all at one visit, and they do a multidisciplinary team assessment. So that is the clinical component. Kids are also eligible to be evaluated through your school districts for what we would call an educational autism assessment. So if you have concerns about how they're doing in school, your teacher's giving you feedback that your child's struggling with, you know, social relationships, they're seeing quirky behaviors, they're struggling with speech and language, those are all things that would be assessed. And if they are determined to meet the eligibility classification for autism as a school diagnosis, then you are given what is called an individual education plan. And through that plan, the school will outline the different services that they will provide your child to make sure they get a free and appropriate education. And then even before that, anyone who is birthed to age 3 could also be evaluated by a statewide program called Early On, Early Intervention. And they are set up to assess kids for any type of developmental delay. And if they determine your child is delayed by certain criteria or certain amounts, then they would actually provide services in your home. And they create something called an individual family service plan, where they will outline what kinds of services you're going to get, whether it's a therapist, it's a educator, it is support services. All of those things are part of the school districts and school programs. So the unique thing is, whether we're talking about a commercial payer, Blue Cross Blue Shield, community mental health, they all use the same diagnostic criteria. There's something called the DSM-5. In that, there are specific requirements to be able to diagnose autism. And so, because there is no medical test to detect autism, we are looking at standardized test batteries. There's common tests that people might know of called the ADOS, the Autism Diagnostic Observation Schedule, the Childhood Autism Rating Scales. Those are all standardized tests. We also use parental checklists. We use clinical observations. And what we do is then put all that information together to see if you meet the criteria to receive an autism diagnosis. And then that autism diagnosis, through your diagnostic team, will then drive a treatment plan that they create. So that could be receiving services anywhere from applied behavioral analysis, which is the gold standard treatment for autism, speech pathology, occupational therapy, nutritional counseling, social skills, physical therapy, supportive behavioral therapy. And there's quite an extensive list of services that kids, once you have that diagnosis, are eligible for. And when I say kids, you know, we can diagnose someone with autism anywhere between the age of 18 months and most commercial payers will cover services through the age of 20.
So, Michelle, you just explained how to get a diagnosis for autism. So now if somebody has autism, what kind of employment opportunities are available?
Thanks, Andrea. Great question. So we now start looking at transitional skills as early as high school. And there are kids who potentially would be on what we call a certificate track, where they're not going to get a high school diploma, but they are going to work on activities of daily living, life skills, and vocational services. And then we also have kids who have autism who are on track to receive a high school diploma and then to move into post-secondary, college, and then employment services. So we provide, in the world of vocational services, there are supports for people with autism if they need any type of supported employment, job coaching, soft skills training, all of those things that come natural to most people, those rules about what are appropriate things to do in the workplace, how do we interact with our coworkers. Those are all skills that a lot of times people on the spectrum do need support with. And so we look at partnering with employers in the community and figure out what is the best and most appropriate employment experience, also looking at their interests. And so, you know, we currently have employment opportunities anywhere from large companies to different types of restaurants, stores, automotive manufacturing. So, you know, I look at it this way, that whatever someone's interests are, we need to then look at trying to figure out how to support them in that environment and make those adjustments and make those accommodations so they are successful, and really looking at what kind of environmental changes can we make to be able to support them. So, you know, we need to look at their interests and their desires and look at how we can realistically make sure someone is going to be successful in a work environment.
Michelle, I know March was National Disabilities Awareness Month. How has COVID impacted the opportunities that you had in this area? And do you see that changing in the near future?
Yeah, great question, Trish. Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month, it started back in 1987. And the whole goal was to raise awareness of disabilities, to be able to get people in the employment, in the workforces, supported employment, deinstitutionalization, all great things for people with developmental disabilities. The reality is COVID has been a huge setback. You know, we have had businesses because of COVID that have had to shut down, which were our employment opportunities. Because people with developmental disabilities a lot of times have comorbidity or comorbid issues, other health problems that also are part of their disability, which makes them medically fragile. So all of those different things that have impacted their ability to be out, to be recognized, safety concerns have really impacted our ability to do anything to recognize National Disability Awareness. We are using social media, but events that we'd normally hold in person, we've had to postpone or cancel.
So Michelle, April is Autism Awareness Month, and the Judson Center's Autism Awareness Campaign is called Bring Autism to Light. And I know this isn't an effort to increase awareness. So curious, why blue?
Lisa, there's an international organization called Autism Speaks, which is an advocacy organization, and they coined the term, and they actually picked the color blue to represent or symbolize autism. And so most autism providers and, you know, the international community now have adopted the blue color to represent autism. Blue does have symbolization. It creates a feeling of calmness and exception in a world that can be very loud and challenging for people with autism. So that is another piece of the fit for the color blue. And so, you know, it's very important that we raise awareness. In 2019, the Centers for Disease Control did another prevalence study, and the incident rate for autism is now 1 in 54. And we are finding that boys are 4 times more likely to be diagnosed than girls. And so we really need to make sure everybody is aware that we're dealing with a crisis right now and that we need to make sure people understand accessing services, how to get diagnosed. And it's a very vital service that people need to understand. And organizations like Judson Center are providing service to help meet this need.
So do you have any specific events that are lined up for the month of April to help bring awareness to this issue?
We do. We are very excited to kick off our Bring Autism to Light event on April 1st. And if people wanted to stop by or drive by our Royal Oak Autism Connection Center at 13 in Greenfield, they will find that the property is lit up with blue lights. We'll have blue spotlights. We'll have blue string lights. We will have blue lights and any of our light fixtures. And it really is beautiful to be able to see that. And so we use this to draw attention, but it's also a beautiful thing for anybody driving by to see how neat the building looks all lit up with blue.
Great, thank you. And can you tell us a little bit more about the Autism Awareness Care Kits and sponsorship opportunities?
Sure. We typically will hold an in-person event in recognition of Autism Awareness Month. But last year and this year, we have decided that we will cancel any in-person events. And so because this has been such a challenging year for our families who have had to work remote, figure out how to provide academic services to their children, and figure out how to navigate through ABA services, we wanted to do something to just recognize them, to give them some sense of support and relief and care. And so we are putting together care packages for our families that will include some type of sensory toy, like a fidget spinner, a kite, where families can have some opportunity to go out and do an activity together. And we're also currently working on obtaining tickets for a local gym that we have in Royal Oak. And the whole goal is to be able to encourage families to get outdoors, do something healthy together, and almost try to get back to some sense of normalcy, because the last year has been nothing but chaos for a lot of our families. So it's just a small opportunity for us to really demonstrate we appreciate our families and the learners and allowing us to continue to be part of their lives and in supporting their kids.
Lisa's why blue question sparked another question from me. I recently got to design an engagement ring for a teacher of autistic children, and her fiance wanted to incorporate something that had to do with autism into the ring because her children are such an important part of her life. So we did the puzzle piece, and I'm wondering, what does the puzzle piece represent?
So the puzzle piece represents the fact that we're all different, but we are bound by being able to be put together. So you look at all puzzle pieces, they're all different, but they do fit together.
I have two kids, and I think all kids are puzzles.
I have three, and I agree.
True that.
Has the pandemic permanently impacted or changed the way that autism is handled?
That is a very interesting question, Trish, that is kind of evolving over time. So not to be disrespectful of the impact of COVID, the negative impact that COVID has had, there are some things that I would identify as positives that have come out of the COVID pandemic. And one of them is the reason that we have had to step back and look at how we do business. And it's really made us look at how we have traditionally done things and how we have had to adapt and change our model of care. So we now are providing center-based services, which is the primary service we've always offered. We also have telehealth services where we are able to do a lot of parent training. We do some limited behavior technician ABA support through telehealth. And then we are also doing in-home services. So most behavior analysts prefer and support center-based services because with ABA, which is very data-driven, They want to make sure that they are protecting the integrity of the treatment. And in order to do that, you have to be able to control so many variables. And so when you're going into someone's personal home, there's a lot of variables you can't control. And you're having a technician out in the home without the behavior analyst being there immediately to provide feedback if they need to. Telehealth also brings in challenges because with some kids on the spectrum, they require what we call hand-over-hand support. When they're working with their therapist, the therapist is actually guiding their hand. That is impossible to do via telehealth. And so that has created its own challenges. And then with center-based, because of all of the risk mitigation practices we have, we've had to cut our census down to about half of what it was. So within that realm, we have figured out how we can still provide services to all of our enrolled learners, but we've had to modify. And it's a continuous process, reevaluating how we're providing services and looking at how can we improve things. And we're now at the point where we're looking at, is this going to be how we practice moving forward? And is this going to be the state of ABA going forward? And so there's not a lot of research supporting telehealth and all the in-home services and like this new hybrid model that we're functioning under, but I'm sure it's coming. And I believe that for us, we need to continue to provide this modified type of service to meet the needs of the families. And the challenge lies within, you know, these changes happen on a daily basis. And so the theme is, how can we be adaptable yet still meet the needs of the family, protect the integrity of applied behavioral analysis, and continue to make gains for our kids? Because change is very challenging for a lot of our consumers or our learners that are on the spectrum. And so taking all those things into consideration are the things that drive our decisions we're making.
So Michelle, I know the Judson Center is so well known in the area and does some great work and really involved as all the things you've been discussing with us for the last little bit here. Do you have any specific success stories with autism or developmental disabilities, employment, or general success stories you could share with us?
Sure. Related to our developmental disabilities or our vocational rehab program, I can proudly say that we have been able to place 90% of our enrolled clients in a work experience within 6 months, which is very quick for someone who has a developmental disability.
Wow.
And they've all been able to maintain employment for a minimum of a year at a rate of 90%, which is very exciting. It's a great statistic. And so I'm very proud of our team because it really has to do with the coaching, the individualized plans that they're making, and how they're supporting the clients in the employment or workforce. So that's very exciting. And for autism, I would define a success story as parents recognizing any bit of progress in their child. You know, when we get a lot of our kids who start services, you know, the families are very sad. They are feeling defeated and really almost at a point where, you know, they're questioning, will their child ever be able to do things? And so for me, the definition of a success is parents recognizing that their child has achieved one goal. Even if it's a small goal, that's a huge win. And we are fortunate, and we do have kids who graduate from our programs who no longer need our services and will go back to their school program, or they will go back to their post-secondary program, or they will go into our vocational services. So those are all examples of a win. And a child accomplishing one goal is a huge win in my book.
That's great. So will there be any summer programs for autism this year?
Yes. Andrea, we will be providing summer services for our applied behavioral analysis clients, the learners who are using our Autism Connections program. What happens typically for summer, because kids are out of school, they will be approved for additional ABA hours. So we actually increase the hours that kids will be coming for service in the summer. We also have our vocational rehab for Wayne County and for Oakland County, we actually do a summer work experience. So they have teenagers who will come in and we get them set up with a 6-week work opportunity, which is kind of that natural age that any child with a disability or not would be looking at a work experience. And so we do have that. Traditionally, we have done a couple programs with some of the school districts that we call our summer program. But because of COVID, we have decided that this summer we will only continue our current programs that we're providing, not bringing in the other summer kids. And so our goal is to get back on track next year when things level out and be able to offer those services again for summer.
Great. And is there any opportunities for people to volunteer at the Judson Center?
There is. I actually just had a meeting with our volunteer department about recruiting volunteers to support our centers with projects, busy work. There's other opportunities for programs that Judson has throughout the year. We do a holiday gift giving program. We have some volunteers who come in and help spruce up some of our centers and clean up the yards for us. So we always do have volunteer opportunities, and some could be a one-time opportunity. Some could be almost like a permanent, I want to do something on a routine basis. And we are able to accommodate that because we have a lot of paperwork and scanning and, you know, quality measures that we take a look at. And so we were just discussing that this morning about how we could use volunteers to support some of the front office type of services and pieces that go with our program.
Now we'll get to our fishbowl question. And Trish, could you pull a question from the fishbowl to ask Michelle?
Michelle, if you could meet any person, past or present, who would it be and why?
Wow, that's a great question, Trish. You know, I would say John F. Kennedy. You know, he was such an impressive president with all of his humanitarian acts and the direction he brought the country. And being a social worker, being in the field that I'm in, I feel like we would have a lot of unique and similar things to talk about. And so I think it would be very interesting to talk to him, to hear his perspective from the 60s compared to where we're at now.
Michelle, I grew up in Boston, so I'm going to have to say I think that is a wicked good answer.
Great.
Before we let you go, we're going to put all of your contact information in the show notes from the podcast. But if you would, what are the best ways to find the Judson Center online, website, phone number, social, whatever you want to promote?
You could go to judsoncenter.org, which is our website address. We are also on Facebook at Judson Center. We have a main phone number for anyone who has any questions, if they are interested in volunteering, if they would like to get on our waiting list for services. That's 248-549-4339. And if anybody just has a question, we are happy to field and answer any questions to make sure that people get in the right hands of any providers or services that they need. Even if it's not a service we provide, we're happy to help direct families to get them in the hands of the correct providers.
Excellent. Michelle O'Connor-Jaklinski from Judson Center, thank you so much for your time today. I am John Gay from JAG in Detroit Podcast. If you need help with your podcast, you can find me online at jagindetroit.com.
My name is Lisa Bibby, and I'm a realtor with Keller Williams Advantage. I put the real back in realtor. If you have questions about buying or selling a home, feel free to reach out for a complimentary consultation. You can find me on Facebook and subscribe to my YouTube channel at Sold by Lisa B.
My name is Andrea Arndt. I am an intellectual property attorney at Dickinson Wright, and I help my clients protect their inventions and build their brands. You can find me on LinkedIn and on our website, dickinsonwright.com.
My name is Trish Karuk. I own Your Personal Jeweler. We specialize in creating custom jewelry like engagement rings and wedding bands. If you want to find me, you can go on social media, Facebook and Instagram at The Personal Jeweler.
We want to thank you for enjoying this episode of The Rock Pod. It is a product of the Royal Oak Chamber of Commerce, which, of course, you can find their contact information in our show notes. If you enjoy the podcast, you can follow it in Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And we'll talk to you next time.